This is David's Book Talk, bringing authors and book lovers together in a unique way since 2009. Visit us at davidsbooktalk.com and join the conversation at facebook.com/davidsbooktalk. But first, pull up a chair, relax, and enjoy today's episode. Here's your host, David English.
Hello and welcome to David's Book Talk. And boy, we have a good author today. His name is Robert Ellis. His new book is called City of Echoes. I love that title. And it is just out from Thomas and Mercer. Hello.
Hey, David. How are you?
Once again, Robert, you've done it again. You got me hooked on another book. I mean, this is really tremendous stuff. It's one of those books that you read, you finish, and you think, well, now what? Now I'm going to find a book as good as this one.
I think it's the best. I think my books have all progressively gotten better, but there's no way I could have written this book when I wrote The Dead Room. I've been wanting to write it since that time. I mean,
oh, really?
Well, I mean, there's certain techniques at the end, what happens at the end, that I just didn't have the experience as a writer to be able to pull off. And I'm really proud of the way everything worked out in this story, yeah.
You just really know what you're doing. I mean, one only has to read this book to realize that you're really refined your talent. I mean, you really know how to tell a good story. I mean, Matt Jones is just the most interesting character. I mean, we instantly get caught up in his world.
Well, it's funny. There's a twist at the end of chapter 2, and which I have never seen before, but and when I saw that we could do this, that it would just sort of snap the story into action, it just really, I knew after the second chapter that this was going to be really something. And as you're right, you're never sure, but when you get to the end, it turned out that it was. I love it.
And you love doing that to your readers. I mean, you really love playing with your readers.
I do.
And the thing is, I have to be so careful what I say about this book, because I could give something away so easily. It's not even funny, It's like, and I don't want to do that. And yet, when you read a book like this, you're too excited to talk about it. So it's very hard for me.
Most of my friends who have read it said that they needed to take a break about the halfway point because of the intensity. Yeah, so there's a real build to this story, and it really once you get, I think, past chapter 2, you're in, and that's it. It's the story is rolling. You don't have to wait for 100 pages. Once we're at chapter 2, boom. The story just starts to explode. So it's like, it was a very cool experience to write this book.
And even his partner, I'm forgetting his partner's name now, in the book, Matt's partner is interesting too. I mean, he's fascinating, and just about every character in this book is fascinating. I mean, it's hard to really write a book where every character has an interesting point to them. There's something about each one,
right?
Because it's so easy to have one character get lost in the shuffle, or you don't do anything with one character. You tend to take every character and flesh them out.
Well, I really feel that. Yeah, I think they jump off the page as best as I can do. I make every attempt to do that. Kevin Hughes is the character you're talking about, is buddy,
right.
His buddy from that he met in Afghanistan as a soldier and came back to L.A. to become a cop with, and it's a very personal story, and I think that is one of the things that adds a lot of tension to it, the fact that this takes place not just in Lena Gamble's world of L.A. and the LAPD, but it really takes place in Matt's world, which, is, I think, adds a dimension that, is very hard to, it's very rare that you get that kind of magic going. And in this novel, it worked out, you know.
And you take a long time to write a book. I mean, a relatively long time. I waited for this book, and waited for this book, and waited for this book. And it's certainly worth the wait. That there's no doubt about that at all. But why does it take you so long? I mean, is it a long process for you?
No, actually, it's not. It takes me about 4 months to write a book, and it takes me about 4 months of research to sort of nail the story down. You know, it probably takes me about most of a year. The reason there was a delay here was that, you know, we were looking for a new publisher, and
okay.
That all takes time. And instead of bringing the book out when it was finished, you have to wait a year because there's a lot of things that go into the marketing and all that.
Right, and your books are really selling like crazy right now.
Yeah, everything's on fire. Yeah.
Why is that?
The fact that it made the Kindle First program, you know, City of Echoes is an honor. I mean, they only pick 6 books a month, and the word got is, you know, the book won't be out technically till September 1, but. There's a huge pre-sale and pre-order program going on, and it just took off. It went straight to number 3 in the Amazon ranking.
That's amazing. I mean, when you think about all the books that are out there, yours is number 3.
Well, and the greatest part, or the really nice part, is that it's lit up the whole backlist. So all of the Lena Gamble books that people may not have read are being discovered, so there's a lot of discovery going on right now. It's all real good, you know?
And this will be out just in time for people to take it down on Labor Day when they're on vacation, you know?
Yeah, for sure, yeah.
which is nice. This is a great beach read. I mean, you could sit there and just enjoy it. I mean, I'm just thinking about reading anything at the beach is nice, but, you know, this is a great, great story.
Well, I'll tell you, I keep a journal
mm-hmm.
when I'm writing.
Right.
And I keep it from, it begins with the first day that I decide to start a project. And I may not even have the story at the time that I am starting the journal. It's just a place where I can go and write about how I'm going to tell this story and how I can sort things out. And I went through it this morning before our interview,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't realize, I forgot, this began as Lena Gamble 4, and it was, it looks like I got about 3 months into the research and realized that this story would have been better suited for someone younger than her and less experienced.
Interesting.
And, you know, just because the thriller beats are so strong in this, you really need that innocence, just the way Lena was in City of Fire, and just the way Teddy Mac was in The Dead Room. You need that innocence for the terror to really, you know, cut to the bone, you know, in the reader's mind. So that was something I learned today. I had forgotten that.
I mean, the fact that you're consistently a good writer, I mean, I have, is just, it's not so much amazing to me. I just wonder how you do it, I guess. Because I've read some writers where I will read one and I loved it, and the next one I won't like as much. And I wonder why that happens so much.
You know, I don't know. I studied with two of the greatest, you know, Walter Tevis, who wrote The Hustler, and Ben Fell to Earth. And John Truby, who wrote An Enemy of Story, and teaches all the Disney animators how to tell stories. And I just, I think that the one thing is that my emphasis is I have no will to be a writer. My will is to be a storyteller. I don't care about the format. I started in film, mm-hmm. and by way of a very, you know, I had no idea really how I came to become an author of novels, you know.
But you obviously, it's something you really, really enjoy. I mean, this is where you were meant to be, obviously. I mean, you only have to read the book to realize this guy really enjoys writing.
With the first book, I realized that it was so much more fun than writing a screenplay because you knew what the characters were thinking. And it made the experience, you know, it's a finished work. It's not like a screenplay that's a blueprint for a finished work. So, yes, the experience just overwhelmed me, and I never looked back. I wrote Access to Power, and that was it, you know. I love it, yes.
And The Dead Room is just a tremendous book. I mean, everybody should read that book. I mean, if you haven't, if you're listening to this and you haven't read it, go out and get it because you're going to love it. And I really mean that. Everything I've read by you has been wonderful. I mean, and you're 100% all the way for every book. And I just wonder, you know, why can't every author be like that?
Well, I get ready for this, okay? City of Echoes is only part one. It's going to work like The Godfather, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The next Matt Jones book just picks up where City of Echoes ended, okay?
Really?
It's 6 weeks go by. It's going to be like The Godfather, part one and part two. It's going to continue the story.
Oh,
okay?
Wow.
The story is not finished, okay? And part two is set in Philly, okay?
Oh, wow. Now that's even better.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Really?
In Philadelphia, yes. Oh, yes. Just like The Dead Room.
Well, yeah. Now you've really shocked me because, you know, I've read the whole book and I can't say anymore, but I'll just say that.
Yeah. Now you know the. Now you understand the ending.
Yeah. Much more than I did, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But I mean, I just remember when I finished this book, I put it down, and I thought, wow, that's really wonderful. And immediately you think, well, how am I going to find a book that's as good as that? I mean, there's so many. I mean, to me, there's a fair number of mediocre books, unfortunately. I have to say that because it's true. For me, anyway. I can't speak for everybody, but, I mean, there are certain. In order for me to find a really good book is hard.
Yeah.
And I wish it weren't so difficult. But I mean, if I can get really caught up in the story, I really can enjoy a book. But if I get bored at all, it's going to be difficult to get through the book. And I don't want to ever be bored when I'm reading.
Oh, I hear you. Yeah.
And you know that as a writer. Maybe that's why you're a better writer than most.
Well, it really is about those twists and turns. And if you can't give your reader a good ride, you know, I mean, that's the whole goal of creating a story like this is to give them a good ride, and I do everything I possibly can to set it up so that it feels real, and so when it pops and I save them for the last third of the story, once it starts to pop, you go, oh yeah, oh yeah, oh I didn't see it, you know, that kind of stuff.
You seem to know exactly what it is, I mean, how a story should go. I mean, you seem to have a good grasp as far as when it's not working or when it is working, or what you need to do to change that. And I find that fascinating. I mean, the whole process of realizing that it needed to be Matt Jones' story instead of Lena Gamble's fascinates me.
Well, I'll tell you something. People don't, you know, there's a real difference between a detective story, a crime story, and a thriller. And in thrillers, the hero is in jeopardy. So anything you can do to make that hero, I mean, Hitchcock did it all the time. It was the innocent man.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And mm-hmm. That's a thriller, okay? Now, a detective story is Harry Bosch. I mean, experienced, you know, in charge, smarter than anybody in the story. Same with a thriller. You need that component, too. But you can't have a character who's too experienced. That was the whole thing with Lena. Lena starts out, it's her first murder case. That's book one. Book two, she's green, but a little bit, you know, smarter because of her victory of book one. And then book three, she's the best detective in town. And really needed to, with City of Echoes, underline the fact that, you know, reading this for the first time, just like you are.
Mm-hmm.
And the way the story is written is it's through his eyes, so you are seeing the murder and everything he's thinking just as he is, okay? So it's really me as an author taking a step back and letting the characters sort of run the show, and that's the beauty of it.
What was the moment that you realized that you wanted to write books? I mean, you said you started out doing film, you were doing screenplays. Did you realize back then that you really wanted to write, or what did it come after that?
I was really into Hitchcock movies, and his favorite author was a writer in England, John Buchan, who wrote The 39 Steps, Green Mantle. It's the Richard Haney series. The
mm-hmm.
books that were written during the First World War, they still hold up. They're great. And you can actually see scenes from those books in every one of Hitchcock's movies, including in North by Northwest, the airplane scene. That's right out of Green Mantle.
Is it really?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. So I was very much into that, and I was in my 20s, and I did try to write a novel, okay? I wrote one chapter, I gave up on it and went back to writing screenplays.
Interesting. You know, the true test of a really great book is when you put the book down, you want to go back to it. Because we all know, we've all had books that we started reading and then you get bored with it and maybe you never go back to it. But the true test is, do you miss the characters enough that you're going to go back and read the book again? And in this case, Matt Jones is so interesting. We have to know what happens to Matt. I mean, I have to know. I have to read this book, you know, and I feel that draw toward him, and I never once didn't want to go back and read it.
He's really got the weight of the world on his shoulders too, which makes, you know, his position all the more difficult. Which is the key, by the way, I think, to a really good story, is to really dump as much as you can on the hero, and make sure that there's plenty of opposition, and that the opponents are stronger, and it looks like, you know, Matt's going to lose.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Oh, it definitely feels that way in this book.
Yeah.
Definitely. More than once, I must say.
Right. And he's kind of edgy, too, I thought it was really fun, especially, and this doesn't blow anything, but there's a scene when he goes to just a spot where a victim had been found.
Right, yeah.
And there's there are a bunch of pictures of the victim and candles and the whole memorial there by this tree. And he goes for a look, gets a cup of coffee and goes for a look, and there are two women, you know, sort of young women fixing up the place and replacing the faux candles, you know, the batteries and doing
right.
all that.
Mm-hmm.
And he sits and watches them, and they see him, and they think he's the killer. It's just edgy. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Very Hitchcockian. That psychological stuff that Hitchcock always did so well. I mean, the mistrust and the wonder and the, you know.
Well, that's the other key to a thriller is trust. Who can I trust? I mean, that's the central question. And everybody who's read City of Echoes talks about that, and it blows my mind that it was that, you know, that it came through. So, you know, I'm really pleased with the way it came through.
I mean, you are on a caliber with Michael Connelly. I mean, Michael Connelly is one of the greats, and you are as good a writer as he is. I mean, and I know it. I mean, I really know that you are, and I don't know how that makes you feel when I say that, but, I mean, you just have that much, as much talent as he does.
That's very nice to hear. I mean, I don't know, but I have to say that there's no way I would have been a writer without Michael Connelly. I love especially the early ones. I think his fourth book, The Last Coyote, is one of the best detective stories ever written. Mm-hmm. It just blows my mind, that book.
You think of writers today, and I always think, you know, some writers have... They seem like Harper Lee just published her second book. I mean, it's like after all these years. But you wonder, why didn't she have more books in her? I mean, why do some writers have only a few books and other writers have a lot more? And I mean,
I don't know. You know, the interesting thing, because I think about that a lot, that question. I mean, that's a great question. Why did Marquez only have 100 years of solitude?
That was it for him, huh?
I mean, well, he had a lot of other books, but they're all a derivative of that book. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
One of the greatest writers that ever lived. What about Catcher in the Rye? You know, it has nothing to do with the quality of the book or the writer. It's just the way it often is that they have one book and one story to tell, and it all happens in that book, and it has, I don't think, any meaning. Because I could go through a list of brand name authors that most people will say, you know, has a multitude of books, but I could show you that they only had one in them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the way it is, and it, I don't, you know, it's tough in this the corporate part of publishing to think about that issue, you know. But and then you have other guys like Robert Crace, who just got better and better and better and better, you know, or Conley, who just, you know what I mean? Too
exactly.
Many good ones to count. It's like, it's an amazing thing, but I don't think it has anything to do with the value of that writer.
And when you think about, you think of a series, you think of like Spencer. As much as I enjoyed reading some of the Spencer books, I find a lot of them are very similar to the other ones. I don't see a lot of differences in each book. I know people would probably disagree with me on this, but I just, as I know he had talent, but I got tired of the same old Spencer every book, and I never saw him change all that much. And yet people love Spencer, and people love Hawk, and people love Susan, you know, and
right,
and they're
right.
they're indelible characters in a lot of people's minds, but.
Yeah, well, you can't account for personal taste, too, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
You know what I mean?
And I met Robert Parker before he died, and he was a great guy. I mean, and I'm sure he had a lot of talent. I just got tired of the series after a while. I couldn't read anymore, and maybe that's me. Maybe there was something wrong with me at the time. I don't know. But that's the interesting part about books. Everybody has a different idea of what they like and what's good and what isn't. I mean, and
that's what makes it so wonderful, you know.
I mean, I mean, you think about some books that, you know, people would probably say aren't really great books, but the characters are memorable enough that people have responded so, I mean, amazingly too, you know. And you think about characters, you think about after you finish a book, does the character stay with you, or do you forget about the character the next day?
I have a ton of authors that I just love for that very reason. So, I think that's what makes a good read. Okay, it's somehow the there's a fusion of there's a fusion of character and story. You know, it's just. That's my favorite part of writing too, is the characters, and especially some of the quirky ones, and I think that's been all through all my books.
Mm-hmm.
So I always try to have some fun with it.
When you read a book, how long do you give it before you give up on it? Say you read, I mean, are there a certain number of pages and then you give up on it?
Yeah, 100.
100. Then you give up after that.
Yeah.
But what if it's a really bad book? You still go to page 100?
No. As a matter of fact, I ran into one, and I got to 50, and there was a repetition of a phrase that I didn't like the phrase in the first place, but it was repeated at least 50 times in 50 pages. And I got so angry, I threw it out.
Did you really?
I did.
But I mean, it's like comedy. It's like everything. I mean, comedy is one of those things too. You either find something funny or you don't find something funny, and everybody's different. And yet, I look at some of these comedians today and I think, how do they have a career? I don't think they're all that funny. But a lot of people must think they are because they're all over the place.
Well, you know, we live in a curious world, my friend. I mean, you know, a lot of things, corporations are. A lot going on behind the scenes these days that was never there before. I feel like that the most difficult job in the world would be to be a stand-up comic, to be able to write a single, like, 90-minute act and then try to do a second one. Mm. I just can't even believe how difficult that must be.
And to be funny and to get laughs. If you don't get any laughs, imagine how embarrassing it must be.
Well, yeah, but you know what? I think we're in a renaissance of really great comics these days. You know, Lewis Black, a guy who passed away 2 years ago, young guy, John Panette.
Okay.
Who was from the Philadelphia area and I guess we had gone to the hospital for some operation and he got a blood clot. But he, that guy, those are geniuses, you know.
Now, even as you're telling me there's going to be another Matt Jones book, I'm running through my mind thinking, oh my God, what is going to be in this next book? And now I'm going to do that until the book comes out. You know that. You're torturing me now. I mean, literally, it hurts for when a fan really loves. I love the way you laugh, by the way. And when a fan really loves an author, it's difficult to wait for the next book.
Well, hopefully it won't have too long a wait. It's already for sale and pre-order for August 1 next year.
Are you serious? And it has a title already?
Yes.
Seriously?
The Love Killings.
The Love Killing. No. As opposed to the Love Boat, right?
Yeah. You'll see.
No connections there, I'm sure. The Love Killing, that's an interesting title. I mean, that's totally different from your other books.
I love it. I've been wanting that title for a year, so and it really fits this story. So
it makes you think in your mind, what could that possibly be about?
You know what? There were questions raised in City of Echoes that need to be answered. That's all I'm going to say.
Should I, as a reader, know what those questions are? Because I don't at this point.
You'll see.
Oh, really? But I mean,
it'll fit.
Did you do it intentionally that the reader should pick up on it when they're reading it?
No, it's not that big a deal, actually. It's just that the story isn't finished, in my opinion. It needs. We have a whole other book to go to finish this side of meeting Matt Jones. And then once that book is finished, we'll break away and do another Matt Jones mystery or thriller with, you know, a story that's completely unique.
Now, you said the next book is set in Philly. Did you write it in Philly? Did you go to Philly and write it there?
I'm still working on it.
Oh, okay. So you're writing it in California?
I'm in Connecticut.
Oh, you're in Connecticut? Okay.
Yeah.
I'm confused.
Yeah. I'm looking at Long Island Sound as we speak.
Really? How interesting.
Yeah.
Are there certain places that you write better than others?
You know, most of my books are written, I don't know. I can't answer that question. Anywhere that's comfortable is good.
I know Lawrence Bach goes away to write. When he writes, he goes away to a retreat and writes.
Right.
You talk about a fascinating author. He's pretty much the most fascinating man you'll ever
meet. I love Lawrence Bach. Yeah, I love him. I love, you know, in the early days, he read his the books on tape or audio books.
Oh, he's great.
He read them. There was no voiceover talent. It was Lawrence Bach, and he, you know, as you know, got a great voice and a great sense of humor, and it's just an attitude. And when he reads them, and I have three or four of them, they're just wonderful.
He is. He does. I remember when he was reading at Barnes & Noble one night when I was there, and I was mesmerized. I thought, oh, my God. I didn't realize he had so much talent in actually verbally telling a story. It's just amazing to me.
Yeah, he's a wonderful guy.
And I remember,
you know, I think you'll find that that's pretty true of a whole bunch of authors that we all know. It's a great group of people, and very, very, you know, thoughtful group of people. But also, I think, you know, really trying to make the world a better place. I think that's half of the reason, at least half the reason why I do it.
So the question, it begs the question, are we going to see a movie, a TV series out of any of your books?
You know, I don't know. It's so difficult. We've been so close so many times. The Dead Room this year was really close. Access to Power had a script and a director and thought it was ready to go. It's just very difficult because so much money is involved. And, you know, you can be so close and then, boom, it falls apart. So, but like I said, yeah, we'll see what happens.
It's a weird world out there. You never know what's gonna be filmed. I mean, it's just something becomes hot and it just all of a sudden they want it, you know, and they want to do it. And
right.
Or a name is attached. You almost want to throw it into somebody famous's hands. Just say, here, wouldn't this make a great movie?
we've been close with the books at that level, too. It's still very iffy.
Now, here's another question. How old is Matt Jones when this book starts?
29.
He's 29. Now, why did you pick 29?
Well, it's a year less than 30. I mean,
you know, there you go.
Here's his life in a nutshell. He was abandoned by his father. His mother died of cancer. He was raised by his aunt in New Jersey. She passes. The war in Afghanistan is going on. He goes over. So he becomes a soldier. He comes back. He meets Kevin Hughes, their buddies, in this, you know, overseas, decides to leave his ghost behind and move to California. He becomes a cop. 5 years go by, and that's the day that this story begins. He's been promoted to homicide, and he's working his very first murder case. And this book begins on the first day of that case. So that's why it would be 29.
Do you have any trouble at all remembering the plots of any of your books? You seem to have them all down just like that. I mean, you seem to know everything about every book.
To tell you the truth, there's only room for one book at a time in my head. I really, you know what I mean? Like, I had to
yes.
Think back to what's, you know, we can talk about City of Echoes because it's fresh on my mind. It's hot off the press, but. You know.
I haven't seen, you know, they were supposed to send me a picture of the cover. I have yet to see that cover. I don't know where, I think that email ended up in outer space somewhere. But
oh, well, it's up, if you go to Amazon, you'll see it.
Oh, really? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
What can you describe the cover for me?
It's the city at night. It's a mirror image split in the middle. It's beautiful.
Oh, wow.
It's just beautiful.
Did you pick the cover, or did you have a say in the cover?
Well, I mean, you have a voice, yes, but I mean, you know, really, my editors just sort of nailed it. I mean, was my feeling. You know, there wasn't much to say. I thought it was, the minute I saw it, I was, you know, taken by it.
Because some of your other books have city landscapes on sort of on your, I've noticed before. Some of the other ones have
Selena Gamble books, yeah.
They have city. It's like Lisa Scottolini's always have a woman running in her books. it's like, what do you mean? I guess, you know, the same kind of thing people know, maybe they're familiar with it. I don't know. Maybe that's something to do with it. I don't know why they pick certain covers.
Well, I think they picked this one based on the title and sort of the feel of the word echoes. And it's a mirror image and a reflection. And, you know, this book is really about the way things appear to be versus the way things truly are, and Matt's discovery of the way things really are, but also the opponent's talent for making it appear to be something else. And that really is the key to the story, and I think that the artist who did the cover had that feeling as well. Yeah.
So the artists never call you up and say and work with you on the cover.
No,
they just do it independently.
No, they
and hope you like it.
Well, I thought they nailed it. Yeah.
Well, that's good. I mean, that's good to hear. Now this book's going to be available in the bookstores and e-books and everything, just like a normal book.
I believe so. Yes.
I wonder if like the Barnes and Nobles and all the other independents are going to have it.
Know about Barnes and Noble, but I think it'll depend on store by store.
I mean, this is a book you could hand sell tons of these. I mean, there's no doubt about that. I think about Joe and how many he could sell. You know, it's like
he'd love this. He would love this. I know.
And if I keep thinking about that, I'm gonna start crying.
Yeah, I know.
But this is a great hand sell. I mean, you read this kind of book and you think, wow, I want everybody to read this book. I want everybody to get this feeling of how good the book is written and how interesting the story is and how much, like you said, it becomes more and more interesting the more you get into it.
Well, it's just so personal. I think that is really the key to understanding Matt Jones.
And you don't base your characters on anybody real.
No, although I am inspired from time to time by real people. There's nobody real in this, although there's heavy inspiration in a couple of characters.
Interesting. But,
yeah, the one character talks like someone I know.
Does that person know that it's them?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
that must be great fun. I know. I mean, it's fascinating. You always think, I wonder where an author got this character from, and who are they, and are they somebody real? We always want to know if they're somebody real.
Well, you don't want to say anything, really, because you don't want the, it's sort of like an actor who does a lot of things other than act in films. That's really kind of softening the edge of their talent, because you want to see the character. You don't want to see the real person. You know, when I see an actor, I don't a performance. I want to see the character. I don't want to think about the actor's life or whatever. And it's the same in a book. I don't want anything to interrupt your feeling about who this character is. You know, so one of the greatest things about a book is that a writer and their editors, a writer creates it, and then with the editor they make this story, and the reader completes the circle, because in their mind their interpretation of the characters and what's going on is always unique. And and that is the coolest part of writing a novel and reading a novel, is that the reader is as much a part of the process as the writer.
Now, do you know if Publishers Weekly is going to be reviewing your book?
Well, I know Booklist did and gave it a starred review.
Oh, that's cool. Okay, because I can't wait to see with Publishers Weekly. They can be really rough on books.
Yep. They were rough on Murder Season.
Kirkus can be really rough, too, you know, with some of the books.
Yeah.
I don't know whose opinion you value the most, but I mean, I love them all, and I don't just say that lightly, because I'm very, very picky, and if a book's boring, it's going to be boring, and I'm not going to tell you it's great if I found it boring. That would be pointless. I mean,
right.
I mean, there's no sense to telling an author that and think he's great if you don't think he is, you know?
Well, the book list review's up on the Amazon page.
Oh, really? I'll have to check a look at that. I know I don't like to read reviews while I'm reading the book, because it If it turns out to be a bad review, I'll stop reading the book probably, you know. It's right. Like seeing a movie. You don't want to go to the movies. If you see a bad review of the movie, you think, oh, maybe I shouldn't waste my money on it.
I've been very fortunate. If you look at the reviews on my website, I've got a lot of very good reviews. I don't post the bad ones. I don't put as much faith in reviews as it's for a writer. It's not
And the readers are harder on the authors than the reviewers a lot of times.
It's true.
You read some of these reader reviews and you think, oh my God. I've not read any of the reviews of your books as far as the readers. I don't think I've gotten that far yet, but I mean, I love them all, so I know they're good, and I don't care what anybody else says. But that's true. That's absolutely true. I'm thinking of the show True Detective that's on HBO, and I remember the first season was so great. This season, I don't know. I don't know if you watched the series or not, but...
Totally into Ray Donovan. That was my show. It's over on Showtime. It was produced by and created by a woman writer named Ann Bitterman, and I thought she was terrific. I thought she was the best writer living.
And I've been thinking about watching that show, and now you're going to send me over the edge and make me watch it.
Yeah. So. Well, just the first two seasons. The third season started, and she's gone. And you can really tell that she's gone. But the first two seasons, especially the second, to me, is the best fiction in all of fiction. Okay, I don't care whether it's a book, movie, whatever. That second season was it.
Sort of like the Dexter season with John Lithgow. God, that was incredible.
It just blew my mind, yeah. I thought it was terrific. I thought Ann Bitterman was terrific, and you could really tell there was a huge story drop-off when season three began. But, you know, I think that's very tough for these series because they kill off so many great characters, and you have to do it, you know? That it's not like you can blame anybody. The show has to start over now. The series has to start over now because season two was so great. So yeah. I'm watching, and I'm hoping they'll get, you know, their footing. But they really are having to start at ground zero.
I hate when that happens. I hate when you're in the middle of a show and it just starts to get bad.
House of Cards was the same deal. They blew out so many great characters that they had to start all over again. And part of the price of doing a business as a cable series, and the price you have to pay to write well is you have to get rid of characters. You know, and you've seen it in my work. I mean, I get rid of... sometimes it's very sad who goes down for the count, but you have to do it to make the story resonate.
All right, exactly. I'm thinking of one character in particular in House of Cards that they killed off that really upset me. I don't want to mention it because there are probably people who haven't seen it yet, but he says an evil character, that Kevin Spacey.
He really is.
But he's so good at doing it, and the fact that it creeps you out when he starts looking at the camera, and you think, oh my God, I wish he would stop looking at me, you know?
I stopped watching that series, but yeah, I really enjoyed the first year.
And Robin, what's her name? Robin Wright Penn. I guess it's just Robin Wright now.
But she's terrific.
She is terrific, and she's so strong, and she's... And you think she's such a nice person, all of a sudden she'll say something nasty to somebody. Like, well, she's not such a nice lady after all. she's got a wicked side to her, you know, and it's so interesting to watch.
It was fun. The first season was fun for me because they were doing that thing with the cigarette, and I had done that in The Lost Witness.
Uh-huh.
And I thought that was pretty cool.
Do you think they stole that from you?
No, I don't. Absolutely not. But, you know, it was out there, and I just thought it was fun. I mean,
Do you ever get letters from famous people that have read your books?
I got a there's an object in City of Fire, and actually it's a guitar pick, and I had made it up, and I got a note from Eric Clapton's friend, who said that he had read the book and loved it, and that that pick actually exists, and that
it's
made of gold. He said that it actually exists, and Eric Clapton had it made.
How weird.
Isn't that something?
Now, his friend was not somebody, it's not a name that I would know if you said it?
No.
Okay, so somebody who, isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
I guess as a writer, you wonder who's reading your books. Like, I wonder who's.
I was. Somebody saw Barbara Streisand reading Access to Power.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
I wonder what she thought of it.
I don't know. I know she's into politics, so.
How wonderful.
Yeah.
And how in the world did you find out about it? That's interesting.
Well, that got very close to being a film, and I was doing meetings with Peter Himes, the guy that directed 2010.
Oh, yeah.
The movie, yeah. And I was working on the screenplay with him, you know, and we would meet, you know, once a week and at his office and, you know, go through, you know, the notes and all that and the writing of the screenplay. And he was a friend of hers, and he said it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So the next book, you're already writing it.
Yes.
And it will definitely be out next August.
Yeah, that's our deadline, you know.
Oh, don't go back on me now. I mean, you're going to kill me if you make me wait more than a year.
No, can't. Not on this story. You know, everybody who reads City of Echoes will understand why this has to come quickly.
I mean, when I think about authors and that I can't wait for the next book, I mean, you're right there. And you and Tana French. Tana French is another one. I can't wait for her next book either. Although her last book was bad. I have to admit, I hate to say that over the air, but it's true. it just wasn't as good as her other stuff. I mean, her idea of telling a story where a character becomes a character that's been murdered was fascinating. And it was a book called The Likeness, and the character goes and becomes that person that was murdered.
Oh, wow.
And it's a tremendous, one of those books you just grip, by the end of the book, you're just totally, you can't wait to see what's going to happen next. And as you're watching this woman try to pull this off, and it's slowly unraveling, it's just fascinating. It really is. I'm sure you haven't read it, obviously. But
I haven't, no.
I highly recommend it because it's really that tremendous. But I just remember where I was when I was finishing the book. And you know a book's good when you can remember where you were when you read it. You know, that's the kind of thing. And you know, the great thing about City of Echoes, too, is that I can see some of the scenes in my head. Matt, and I'm not going to say who the other character is. I see all these scenes in my head and the conversations and you know, and him going to the house, the woman's house and things like that. But I don't want to give too much away. But
I'll tell you, I really feel that the dialogue, the way things are said, all of that is far and away the best book I've ever written.
Is it, when you write dialogue, do you rewrite it, or does it automatically just come out that way, or do you have to refine it in some way?
No, it comes out that way. Yeah.
So it's pretty easy. At this point, it just you know what you're doing so much that you don't have to change things.
We do very little changing in these novels. None of my novels are heavily edited. They're sweetened, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
A sentence here, a sentence there. No story changes happen because it's just too complicated. It would be too complicated for me to even get in there and change something because it could, the whole house of cards could fall, you know? It's like, so really when the draft goes out, it was really sweetened by my editors, and they did a terrific job. And you know, I don't know. The same thing with the Lena series. You know, they make pass after pass after pass and catch, try to catch as many, spelling thing, you know, errors or whatever, as you can, and just sort of clean the thing up.
Yeah, I hate when I'm reading a book and I see an error. Oh, I hate that so much.
It's so difficult in a thriller to spot them, though, because it's so hard to see the words. The story is amped up so high that it is really difficult for an editor to see the words, because they get swept away by the story.
Well, the whole idea of what the difference between a thriller and a mystery has always been something I've wondered about. I mean, what's a thriller and what's a mystery? And you know.
Well, that's what I meant by when we talked about heroes. A thriller, it's real easy. A thriller is a hero who is in jeopardy, who is the target of the opponent.
Okay.
A mystery in a detective story, the opponent's hidden. And so there's none of that sort of energy to it. It's an entirely kind of different story, even though they share, you know, they are in the same genre. They're really different animals. And that is the other reason why I think your reaction to Matt is so strong, is that you really are on his side, you know. He is really in a jam, and you're really kind of, you know, rooting, hoping he's going to find his way through, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I'm rooting for something else with him, too, and I won't go into that. But, you know, I tell you, I'm going to give something away if I keep talking to you. So it's going to happen. I mean, one of these days I'm going to give away a real huge plot point with some author. They're going to hang up on me. I swear it's going to happen. I mean, sometimes it's virtually... it's almost impossible not to say something. You know? I think I've actually had authors like hint at me that I was giving away too much. I mean, you read, it's like a movie preview now. You go to those movie previews, they practically show you the whole movie in the preview.
Right.
And, and that's annoying. I mean, to me, that is just really annoying, you know?
Without giving something away. And every one of those revelations is just so precious that you don't want to give them away, because it lessens the experience for the reader. And,
now, does every book, successive book, become more difficult to write for you?
For me?
Yeah.
Yes. And it's funny you should say that. Why did you ask that?
Yeah, because I just wonder. Because with each book, there's a surprise, and it's got to get more and more difficult to come up with more of a surprise and more of a surprise for each book. I mean... Jeffrey,
that part doesn't get harder. That part you get better at.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. That part you get better at.
Is it just because you do it so much that you get better at it?
Well, no, it's because you've done it, and now you got to beat it. Okay? You have to do it better. You have to deliver something better than the last one. Okay? So you're in competition with yourself. So how can I make this story even more intense? Okay? And that, by the way, is... The whole deal around the Love Killings, which is the second book with Matt, is how can you get, you know, tossed into an abyss that's even, you know, more dynamic and more frightening than what Matt goes through in City of Echoes. I mean, that's a tough order, so, you know, but. No, I think you get better at that aspect. The harder part is the actual writing of the novel. For me, that is more difficult each time.
Interesting. I would have thought you'd say the exact opposite.
Yeah.
You're very unpredictable, Robert. You really are. I always think I know what you're going to say, and then you surprise me and say something completely different.
Well, you know, I'm always...
which I find fascinating.
Well, I'll tell you, it's always, you have to learn, once you finish a book, you don't really start from where you were. You have to relearn how to tell a story and write a novel. You have to do it again. And so,
Well, you think about an author like Nora Roberts, who's written 160 some books. I don't even know how many is. How the heck would every book she writes be that great? You know, because she has so many books. I mean, it just seems impossible. After a while, wouldn't you start repeating yourself?
She's really working hard, you know, and she's trying to make each one better than the next. I feel the same way about Conley. I feel the same way about Robert Crace. I feel the same way about James Ellroy. I loved the Lloyd Hopkins, the initial four books that were the Pulp Fiction by him.
Oh, yeah. And
somehow he writes, he starts writing epic thrillers, you know, and L.A. Confidential, come on, that's a masterpiece. And just like Michael Conley's The Last Coyote, or just like Robert Crace's The Two-Minute Rule, these are really, really good stories by people who are trying to be better every time, in my opinion. I mean, I don't know what they'd say, but in my opinion, they're working hard.
And that's the trick to writing a good book. You got to work hard at it. I mean, it takes time, and it takes a lot of creative juices going all together. And you know, in my opinion, you have a lot of writers out there who just don't have it anymore. There are writers that I read today, and I think I can't read this writer anymore. And I don't know necessarily why I feel that way. I just know when I read the book, I don't enjoy it anymore.
Right.
And, you know, to put my finger on why that is I don't think I could do it, other than the fact that I just don't enjoy it anymore. And
then it's time to discover someone new, you know?
Exactly. But, I mean, the writers you can trust are the writers you want to stick with.
Right.
That's how I feel. And I don't... How many books do you read a week?
Oh, I read way less than you do, and especially when I'm writing, because I'm afraid that I might, you know, I might borrow something unintentionally.
Would that happen, do you think?
Yeah, it could, because it gets in your imagination. And
but you're always writing, though, aren't you? Do you ever have a space of more than a day or two where you don't write?
I'm not writing when I'm doing research, and that's when I read.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Like right now I'm writing, so if I read anything, it's going to be nonfiction. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's not going to be... Although, there are books from my childhood that I loved, and occasionally I'll pick up one of those while I'm writing, or a John Buchan, and, you know, something older that's from another age that I like, and, you know... I love to reread books very much. I'm a big believer in rereading. And mm-hmm. I used to have a standing list of my top 10 books, and I would reread them every year. And that was before I started writing. But I'll pick up one of those from that list and read it and feel safe that, you know, nothing's going to happen.
And it's interesting the way movies are. I was reading the other day, they're going to make a remake of Murder on the Orient Express, and I think, oh my God, they're going to ruin that.
I don't like remakes, in film. I really don't like them,
And I just can't imagine them doing a great job of filming it. And the way that they make movies nowadays, it's so different, and they tend to, like you said, ruin remakes.
Well, there's a lot of problems, you know, in a remake. For me, is why can't you just come up with a new idea? I mean, that would be
right.
My first reaction. But my second reaction is that the audience is an international audience now, and so they're changing stories so that there's less dialogue, more action, something that will appeal to an audience that's, not the United States. And it's a different product. And I really believe that in terms of film, the best writers are doing cable series now. And I don't even think it's close. I think that I have a friend who teaches, and he says that's always kids want to know, is how to write cable series. That's kind of, in my book, that's what's hot now. And I think Ray Donovan or, you know, some of the series you mentioned, these are all examples of really, really good writing.
Exactly, exactly. I wonder, there's so many international thriller writers out there now, Swedish, and all these foreign writers that are writing, and some of them I find really good and some are really bad. I just wonder how much competition they bring you. When there or is there competition for you?
Or is it? No, I don't think so. I write my stories, and I have my audience, and it's expanding huge now. But it's I don't really think about that part of it.
And what's interesting, I mean, why does a book like The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo become so huge? And other stories that are just as great, like yours, you know, don't become as huge. I mean, why is that?
I can't answer that, you know?
I mean, what is it about The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, other than the character? I mean, the characters are wonderful. Don't get me wrong. The characters are great. I've loved the series. But I just wonder, you know, why does a book become so so tremendous like that? I mean, what is it about that book that resonates with people?
You know, I think that the writer's life and his death played a role in that. I think that people, there was a shock value to it, that it got people excited. We have the rise of women that are just tremendous in stories, but also the acting. So many great actresses and so many great female leads now that it's just at right time, right place.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? It popped.
Well, this has been really great. I could talk to you all day. You laugh. I've meant every word I've said, and you know that because you know I love your writing. And the new book again is called City of Echoes. Robert Ellis will be out September 1st everywhere. From Thomas and Mercer, right? I just forgot the name.
Yeah, some great people.
But
great group.
Well, there's also some really good starred things in the front here with all your other books and everything. Sure, that's cool. I didn't see that at first. Wow. And it's been great talking to you.
Oh, it's great talking to you too, David. I mean, it's been a long time, man.
This has been Dave's Book Talk, and we'll talk to you next time.
You have just enjoyed the podcast of David's Book Talk, brought to you by your host, book lover David English. Please visit us at davidsbooktalk.com, follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and subscribe to our podcast. We want to hear from you, and we don't want you to miss our upcoming shows with top authors like Mary Higgins Clark, Patricia Cornwell, Lisa Scottolini, Jackie Collins, Nelson DeMille, Michael Connelly, Sue Grafton, Steve Martini, Dale Brown, David Baldacci.